Before we get into tonight's show, I would like to let you know that at the end of this show, we will be doing a dedication because of the fact that this show, or the episode of Star Trek, was dedicated to the memory of Gene Roddenberry. I thought it was fitting that we also dedicate our podcast not only to Gene, but others that we have lost along the way. So, to be honest, if you missed the entire review, that's fine. Just go to the end of this podcast and take a listen to what we did.
You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this star time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast, where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Unification. I'm Chris from Glasgow in Scotland.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska, where there's no elections going on today.
Yeah, I have a massive election today.
very good.
Yeah, I've lowered the tone in my second sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how are things going on a couple thousand miles away from me here, guys? How are you? Chris, how have you been?
Things are good. Things are good on my side.
Yeah. Yeah, things are good on my side too. I think we're all busy with work.
Work, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, work. I'm still doing the same thing. Still on the same schedule. We haven't done any changes yet, but I don't know. I don't even know if it's going to happen now. I just take it day by day, so we'll see how it goes. But maybe there will become a time when we could get the show a little more secured in a time slot. But for now, we'll just roll with it. So tonight, we are here to discuss Unification Part 1. Right?
We are.
So
this is a good one.
Is it? So we really don't have much to discuss other than that. So let's go ahead and put the script in. We can continue on.
The synopsis for tonight's show is, to the Federation's surprise, Ambassador Spock has travelled to Romulus. Fearing he has defected, they send Captain Picard and some of his officers on a covert mission to determine why. This is the 7th episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is November 4th, 1991. It's written by Rick Berman and Michael Piller, with teleplay by Jerry Ryan, and directed by Les Landau.
Jerry Ryan.
Guest stars include... Did I say Jerry Ryan? Oh, okay.
He means Jerry Taylor. Go on.
I mean Jerry Taylor, yeah. I'd rather it was Jerry Ryan.
40 of Triple D.
My mind is clearly elsewhere. Guest stars include special guest star Leonard Nimoy as Ambassador Spock and Mark Leonard as Sarek. Joanna Miles as Perrin. Stephen Root, or Milton Waddams to us Office Space Junkies, as Kavada. Graham Jarvis as Clem, or is it Mr.
Dokachin?
Mr. Dokachin. Malachi Throne as Pardek. Norman Large as Jarrell. Daniel Roebuck as Jarn. Eric Avare as Bychik, Karen Hensel as Brackett, and Mimi Cousins as the soup woman from a loyal establishment. Nice. And finally, Majel Barrett is the voice of the computer. So what do we think about this episode? I think it's full of special guest stars and other guests and all sorts. That was a long list.
It's chock full of everything, isn't it?
And that's only part one.
No Jerry Ryan. That's just part one, yeah.
Yeah, that's just part one. We haven't gotten to Sela yet. For part two.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. I got spoilers. Yeah, there could be somebody who doesn't know about this show yet.
We'll definitely come on to it later on, but we mentioned Milton Waddams, the office from Office Space. I had not realized it was Stephen Root until today.
I didn't either. You don't see it. Even when I know it now and I see him talk, I don't see Stephen Root at all. I mean, obviously, you got the Klingon makeup, but he's usually got a pretty good... I can't say that, actually, because most actors, they have a way that even if they're wearing makeup or in different roles, they still have the same inflections, the same facial expressions, and so on. Am I right?
Yep.
But with Stephen Root, that's not true. I've seen him on things like From the Earth to the Moon. He played one of the NASA engineers for that. And then mm-hmm. Office Space and other things that I've seen him on. It's like looking at a different person each time.
Dodgeball is what came to mind for me. Mm-hmm. His character in Dodgeball is completely different from his one in Office Space.
Yeah, that's what I say. I mean, you can't nail the guy down as the same actor. A lot of times it seems like he doesn't even have the same voice. But, yeah, so Captain Cavada, I didn't see him at all. I didn't see Milton. I didn't see any of that. And I tried to look, too. I definitely tried looking. So, now... So my quick synopsis is, I do like this one as well. Obviously, the Romulans are up to something, but we don't know anything about that in this episode. All we know is that Spock left. And even when we have this admiral saying, if it was a defection, the damage to Federation security could be immeasurable, I'd say, you know, surrender now, because if that was the case. But that's not the case, and I never thought it was. James, what about you?
So, I remember loving this episode when I was younger. And I remember also then going off it and thinking, it's not that good. It's just a glorified kind of cameo role for Spock in particular. I mean, in particular part one, he's not really here until the final scene. Which, by the way, I think is a great cliffhanger. Spoilers. But I rewatched this and I thought, actually, though, this is really nicely done. It's building on a lot of storylines that there have been before, both on the Romulan side and on the Klingon side and on the Vulcan side. And I think that the story that it tries to get going in part one, in particular, about reunification and the kind of, you know, the idealistic Spock heading off to try to find peace is very good. And it slightly turns into a bit of a, you know, in part two in particular, a bit of a, you know, a kind of comedy bad guy or bad girl in this particular case, villain. But you have to get out of this. If you're not actually going to make, you know, the Romulans, if you're not going to make them kind of friendly and go through with unification, then you're going to have to kind of reverse out somehow. And so it's almost like they're painting themselves into a corner with part two. But for part one and everything that it introduces, I'm really very very happy and very impressed by this episode. So I'm very positive.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think what they do with this two-parter is very similar to what they do with the two-parter in Redemption at the start of the season. And the first part is very much one story, and the second part is very much a different story. So part one of Redemption was more, this is how we put Gowron in charge, and then part two was more about the Civil War, but they're two stories that obviously link together quite well. And this one, there's very much a, what's Spock done, how do we find out, how do we get there, in part one, and then in part two, it focuses more on the fallout from what he's done and what his aims are and all that kind of thing. So there's two separate stories, sort of, but they're linked together quite well.
But there also seems like a third story that, in the first part, is meaningless. You really don't think anything of it, but all this downed Vulcan ship parts that they have in their cargo bay, what's this all about? Or it was part of a Ferengi ship, or...
Yeah, and actually, this is one of the features of the episode that makes it different from some of the... And by the way, am I correct in saying this is the first mid-season two-parter? Because one of the problems that you have with Best of Both Worlds and Redemption and others that come up, Descent as well, is that you kind of have this big, big storyline and you kind of you build up and you're clearly right in part one without any indication of what's happening in part two. So you look at part one of Best of Both Worlds and it's absolutely fantastic. And then you think, well, how do we get out of this? The same thing for Redemption. It's very disconnected. Whereas here, they're clearly right in both parts at the same time. There's no kind of summer break in between. And as a result, they've got this thread from the that is mentioned in the first episode, which is, well, what's this Vulcan ship? It's a little bit of a mystery. Go on a bit of a hunt to find some of the stuff. Isn't it fun when you have this basically, you've got this guy who thinks he's overly important and Troy has to like massage his ego into showing him where the ships are kept. All of that stuff's really good, but you don't get the payoff into the following week. But in a way, I think that that's a better way of writing the a connected two-parter.
Yep. Totally agree.
And now this was, this starts out with a tribute to Gene Roddenberry, who had died, a few months before this episode came out.
When was the, I thought it was quite close. Mm-hmm. Was it not?
Yeah, I think when I was reading this on Memory Alpha earlier, they were suggesting that there was one episode to come out before it. But Gene Roddenberry died October 24th, 1991. And this aired November 4th, so there would have been another episode just before it, yeah.
Yeah, so this episode would have certainly been finished and had gone through post-production and all of that. It wasn't as if it was written in his memory. It's more that, this was the next episode or the next appropriate episode to have, the stamp on it. Had it been a Rascals or something, I'm sure they wouldn't have dedicated that to him.
Right, I think it was the game came out days after his death, and it was too late for them to do anything, so.
To be honest, I think the tribute fits better with this episode, because at this time, you've only got the original series and the next gen, so this has the crossover in the two, so it's almost fitting that this is the episode to get the tribute to Gene Roddenberry on it.
Okay. And I had suggested to you guys that we make this also a tribute for people we've lost. Have you guys decided to do that? I hear crickets.
I'm afraid I don't have anyone.
Okay, that's fine.
No.
That's okay.
There's no distracting mind to me either.
That's all right. No. Then I'll put this out to a few people that I've lost. I figure why not? Gene wasn't the only one, but... So the ship, the Enterprise was heading for a terraforming mission, wasn't it? And I believe if it was like the season one terraforming mission, one that I absolutely hated, I'm glad they didn't get to go to that. Do you remember that one, James? I think I gave it a one.
Yeah, you're talking about
bags of mostly water.
Yes.
Yeah, you're talking about the home soil episode.
Home soil, that's the one, yes. Because, we are ugly bags of mostly water. I gave it a 1.5. Okay, so I was generous on that one. So we get rid of the terraforming mission, meet up with this admiral who claims that a beloved ambassador and all-around nice guy for many, many hundreds of years has disappeared. And it may have been a defection. Did we really think Spock would have defected to Romulus?
By the way, I'm not entirely sure why not, right? I think we, looking back on it, the truth of the matter, right, is that the next generation was bringing in a new audience that didn't necessarily know the original crew or only knew of them tangentially. I believe that really the crossover here was because the Undiscovered Country was coming out and they kind of wanted to almost hype up that one. I think that a lot of the audience that would have been much more familiar with the Next Generation characters would really be, they would have known tangentially of Spock, but they wouldn't necessarily have you know, been certain in his character enough to be able to say, hey, that's not something that Spock does. Why are you teasing us? So I'm actually, I think that, maybe it's different for you, Lou, that I think you watched the original series before the Next Gen, whereas I didn't. Mm. I never, you know, and as a result, I always went back to the Next Gen. Sorry, back to the original series after Next Gen. So for me, it was a very appropriate and possible storyline that they put here.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, yeah. Cause to me, no, not a chance. Not like, you know.
No, I'm the same, because I watched the original series before I watched Next Gen, so my feelings on this was there's no way Spock's defected. I think the big thing is, okay, it maybe hasn't defected, but what has he done? Because nothing springs to mind.
Yeah.
Certainly not when you first see it. Once you know what the whole thing is about, then you understand it more. But when you first see this part, you go, okay, maybe it hasn't affected, but what is he doing now?
What is he doing, yeah. Is he visiting his friend, the senator? Pardak? He's not a senator. What was he, proconsul or something? Like a lawyer, maybe, for the Romulan people? But, I mean, the idea that Spock woke up one day, told the computer he was feeling fine and to stop asking that damn question, and then just took off for Romulus, it makes no sense. But
I think Pardak was a senator, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure they referred to him as Senator Pardak.
Senator Pardak. But by the way, that's it.
It's the other guy, it's the proconsul.
I think we've kind of, we've gone beyond the first sentence of this episode, which kind of, it may be slightly nitpicky, because you've got the Admiral here and she's turned up because she wasn't prepared to discuss something over subspace. Mm. And then the first thing she does is that, I've got this information for you that we need to discuss, but I'm not prepared to discuss it over subspace. So let me just sit here and have a subspace link into this data center, and I'll bring up this JPEG of Spock. What? How does that make it any better?
I'm sure she did it over SSL. It's fine.
I mean, I can understand it. Had they gone the whole way, she would have brought like a USB stick that she plugged it in. Mm-hmm. But being the person that came over just to type in www.wherespock.com made no sense.
Oh, I like the way she says we need to try and contain this information at least as long as possible. Hell, by that time, everybody knows. Even the Klingons knew.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I mean, Spock's... Not, sorry, I was about to say Spock's mum. Of course not Spock's mum. Really Spock's dad's ninth wife or whatever it is. Yeah. She knew that he had gone, and it's not... If she knows that she's gone, Spock must have had other acquaintances. And, okay, maybe they don't know that he's been picked up on Romulus, but it doesn't... If a high-profile dude disappears just all of a sudden, then there are going to be rumors one way or the other.
Wow. It does make for a terrific teaser anyway. As teasers go in Star Trek, this is one of the best.
Yeah, yes, I mean, that is true. And the fact that the Admiral was there physically makes it a better scene, rather than, you know, Picard just getting an email and him reading it and going...
Open the attachment.
Yeah, but that opens the attachment and goes, whoa, you know, didn't see that one coming. And then they go, dude, and then they cut to the credits.
PDF file.
So what one of the criticisms I've read about this episode is that many people seem to think it loses its impact because we get the reveal of Spock straight away. I've seen it suggested it would be better if we don't find out who it is that's defected until the reveal at the end of part one and he walks in. Now, I've never quite understood that criticism, because if you don't know it's Spock, then you never go and speak to Sarek, and you never get that whole angle of the episode. And I think that's the bit that really makes this episode as special as it is.
I agree. I really agree. I think that there are two things on the Sarek side. I think the Sarek story is it's good because they allow you to have like the connection between Picard and Spock, and admittedly they could have still had that later on if you don't know it is Spock you're going after, because obviously Picard knows it's Spock you're going after. But I like the way that they do call back to the previous season's episodes, and it kind of builds up on the connection and the family connection that there is. I also think that the scenes that they have with Mark Leonard and Patrick Stewart are very good. And I really enjoy seeing Sarek flank for the last time. I really think that, although you can argue that, hey, wouldn't it be more impactful to wait around to find out who it is, and then, oh dear, it's Spock. Well, frankly, I think that people would have been bored waiting. They wouldn't know who it was. It would have to be edited and cut in a way where no one was prepared to discuss it. No one would be talking about going to Vulcan. No one would be talking about, Romulan political movements or anything like that until right at the end. And I think that you'd effectively have a void of a first episode.
Yeah, I think that's probably the crucial part. Yes, you would get that impact right at the end when it's Spock and you go, oh, terrific, or oh, amazing, or oh, that's a big shock. But the preceding 40-odd minutes would just be not a lot, to be honest. You'd be chasing after a ghost.
And the thing that I do, what you also introduced by having Spock kind of shown in a little clip, you don't know whether or not he's gone there by himself, he's defected, whether he's imprisoned or whatever. So you've still got the reveal of, that he's there and he's there willingly. And I think that that's, that he's sitting there in a cave somewhere. And I think that that's that is also a decent place to end it. So I can't really buy into the criticism on that one.
So as I mentioned, Starfleet found some parts of Vulcan ship that was found in a downed Ferengi ship in crates marked medical supplies. And since we still don't know what any of this is about, that's all just filler at this point. We have no... doesn't mean anything.
There seemed to be a bit of concern over the fact that the Ferengi had these bits of a Vulcan ship. Why is that a problem? Don't they have like salvage rights in the 24th century? Well, actually, I know they have salvage rights in the 24th century because I just watched the ship in Deep Space Nine a few weeks ago, and they mentioned that's what Sisko was laying claim onto the ship for.
Yep.
And the Dominion basically said, well, we don't recognise salvage rights, but clearly the Federation recognise it, so the fact that the Ferengi have bits of a Vulcan ship, I think they made a bit too much of that.
And she was one stupid Vorta, too. Had she said, hey, there's a changeling in there, we want him back, then, he could have said, well, you get rid of all of the people that are here except for you, I'll bring him out to you, and then we'll leave.
That was the strength of that episode, was the fact that they didn't, neither side trusted each other, and both cost them.
Yep.
That's what the episode was about, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I know that's like sometimes there's a conceit that you have to build into the show, and it doesn't quite necessarily follow on 100% logically, but the whole point of that, I like that episode quite a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, that's a tangent.
Yeah, definitely.
But they're not already at that episode, are they? What a... Oh, that catchiness.
Yeah.
Oh, I've given up. I've given up trying to stay ahead of them. There's no way it's possible. They're just like way too committed with laser-like precision. I wish I had the ability to do that.
I think, actually, given that they haven't released episode 4 of season 5 yet, and the last Battle Bridge that came out was Ensign Row, I think you're both at season 5, episode 3 right now. Mm-hmm. So it's a draw.
Yeah,
we haven't recorded the next one though, right?
Yeah, we have.
We have. It's Silicon Avatar next.
Yeah, we have Avatar and the Disaster already recorded.
Oh yeah.
Oh no, wow. No, you're right. You are ahead of us, but you're still ahead because I listened to Silicon Avatar.
Oh wait a second! Right, I forgot to mention, James, that we already have the game recorded as well since we're on Unification.
Yes, we do. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, without question.
Yes, yes. I don't recall.
There's no temporal mechanics going on here.
Yeah, I don't even remember my rating for that one at this point. So I had to be between 1 and 5. That's all I remember. Okay, so we find out Sarek is dying and withering away in bed. Now, there are some very important questions I need to ask, and I hope you guys can answer them. First of all, don't Vulcans like blankies? And you know, to have a simple bed in the middle of the room, no television to watch, no nightstand, you know, to put your RC Cola on while you're drinking it. That's pretty sterile in that room. Poor guy.
So the idea of a Vulcan sitting there meditating in an empty room, but having a bottle of half drunk RC Cola, whatever that is. I mean, look, it's been mentioned here, Vulcans are a highly honorable race. They don't get cola.
Or boring race. Highly boring race. Yeah, I suppose not. I mean, can you imagine? I don't know. I think I'd have fun if I got onto Star Trek and I was in my quarters as a guest. I'd go to the replicator and say, give me a pepperoni pizza with an RC Cola, please.
Fish up on a bottle of brew.
Thick. Oh, I forgot to mention thick crust, extra cheese, please. And then we have this, go from me. What do you mean, go from me? Don't you, maybe is that a nice Vulcan way of saying, bitch, get the hell out of here?
Go away, exclamation mark. That's a Billy Connolly reference. It's the polite way of swearing.
I wish no one here. But I guess, you know, he's losing it. But it was interesting that while Picard was talking to him, there were moments he was completely with us. And then
Picard does seem to bring him around every so often, which is it's interesting to see. Again, the acting between Mark Leonard and Patrick Stewart in this is wonderful. The mental state of Sarek in this, by this point, is actually, I don't know, depression is probably not the right word. It's upsetting almost to see a character that many people have grown up with. We may not have been Star Trek all that much, but obviously Sarek was in Journey to Babel and he was in Star Trek 3 and 4. It would have been 6 as well, obviously, but that wouldn't know that at that point in time when you've seen this. So he's a recurring character that everybody has taken to heart somewhat along the line. So to see him in that mental state is very difficult.
You know, another question I had, and it's kind of a serious one. Well, you know, I always say that and then I hit you with something stupid. But how can Spock maintain a relationship with a Romulan senator? I mean, do you think they like had each other's phone numbers and were calling each other someday?
I had Skype, it's fine. You can pick it up at Katama.
Yeah, but I can't imagine that being possible to just, you know, get the Pardax Skype information and just, you know, Jolon True, Pardak, how are you today? I can't imagine how that's possible, given that he's a member of the Federation and they're at this Cold War with Romulus.
I would imagine technically there would have been challenges to try and keep it on the down low and maybe not get monitored, but Spock was a former science officer on the starship. He's probably got ways around it.
Oh, of course. He probably used a microwave oven that, you know, incorporated parts of a sewing machine.
I didn't realize Spock was descended from MacGyver.
Yes, I think so. It was pretty good. But, yeah, you could see the pain in Sarek's face, so, yeah. It was pretty interesting to see that exchange between him and Picard. And, but he also does figure, so you're going there to find him, aren't you? But I am. So, but like I said, he then digresses back to this shriveling, whining person that you just really feel really terrible for.
I think the best part of this was maybe the fact that for all Sarek and Spock had their differences, Sarek is adamant Spock would not have defected. Could never have accepted that, which is, it's good because obviously they had issues with the relationship and Actually, we skipped a little bit where Perrin was on board the Enterprise, and what she tried to explain what happened, and they disagreed over issues about the Cardassians. It actually seemed to me that Spock and Sarek were fine with it, and they accepted that they had different opinions, but it was Perrin herself who took offence at the fact that they didn't agree. So I'm not convinced the rift between Spock and Sarek wasn't caused by her.
Probably the evil step.
Well, I always got the impression with Vulcans that they have this kind of the facade of being kind of like unreasonably reasonable, but kind of like deep down they've got this anger that hates people that they have to meditate away. So it's like when you meet someone that you really don't like, and so when you go out of your way to be polite, and so can you pass the peas? Yes, sure, I'll pass you the peas. And then your internal monologue is die, die, die.
Yeah.
So that's what I was thinking.
Of course, it's a callback to the original series, because the Spock and Sarek didn't go on prior to Journey of Babel. We'd only restored the relationship after that. Mm-hmm. Because, again, they disagreed with each other's choices, and specifically Spock joining Starfleet. So, the Spock and Sarek have always had that sort of strong, it's almost stubbornness, actually, that stops them from talking to each other, because they both believe that they are right and refuse to accept that the other might be wrong. Or the other might be right, sorry.
True. Okay, so we need to find a way to get to Romulus. Well, I don't know, why not just do the same thing Spock did? How'd Spock get there?
Hopped enough freighter.
I'm sure there are civilian ships, right? That you can that you can go on, like, you know, almost like a bus. I think it's different when it's obviously Picard and Data. It's they need to, what's it? They need to be. They obviously need to be in a position to be able to get away and defend themselves if they get caught.
Yeah, and of course they turn to Gowron because, well, you know, they. And it's funny that they mentioned a couple times about the Federation's help to his rise in power. I mean, even Worf and Picard both allude to that our non-interference policy is the reason why he's now the Klingon High Council. God, what do they call him?
Chancellor,
that's it. Yes. But Gowron doesn't have time for that because he's been rewriting history.
I like the ego there. This is very fitting, I think.
Oh, yeah.
This is exactly what you believe Gowron would do. Yeah, it was all me. I'm the greatest. I helped defeat Duras and the Romulans, and I even chased away the Federation. Yes.
It was my bug eyes.
I just stared at him.
Mm-hmm. He gave him the Gowron bug eyes. Everybody who sees that gets intimidated.
But I do like the fact that they do call back, right? There's nothing that that would have prevented the guys just deciding that, hey, this week we happen to have a, obviously not a cloaking device, but, you know, we've got procured transport on, you know, Alien of the Week, and then we're going to go on their ship and everything will be fine. Or even just get a Klingon ship very easily. I like the fact that they end up calling back to the actions of, you know, only a couple of weeks ago, and that the story has moved on, and that the truth of the matter is that Gowron probably would have wanted to cement his power and had done something. And you don't need this part of the story in this episode, but I think it makes the episode kind of more interesting and more real, and the universe itself kind of like a more lived-in universe.
Yeah. And then eventually the call they get is from the equivalent of the Downing Street cat.
Yeah, they do. I love that scene. I think it's really good.
Yeah.
And it's like, we can't grant him an audience with everyone that wants it. He's a very busy man. And you can just see Picard inside, he must be just thinking, what? How did this happen?
Yeah, but I'm the arbiter of succession, you prick. Excuse me. So, yeah, we get Bajic, the junior adjutant to the diplomatic delegation. What does that mean?
I mean, I think he's on work experience.
Yeah. What is an adjutant? That sounds like something that agitates you. Mm-hmm. That can't be a good thing.
In other words, he's never killed anyone in battle. And so he's waiting for that moment he can do something.
I think the most violent he's ever been is when he threw a box of paperclips at somebody in the office.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do like what...
I would imagine Klingon paperclips are spiky, so that might help.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I can imagine. More like Chinese throwing stars. Ah.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not forget, their fun is to sit in a room and headbutt each other to no end. That's I love that's another thing when Jake Sisko sees that, he goes, I don't care, that's gotta hurt. That is so true. It's gotta hurt. But anyway, so I love the way Picard handles Bajic. You know, please inform Gowron that we need a cloaked ship. And oh, by the way, I'm so surprised he's doing so well. A tribute to his skilled leadership. Oh, but by the way, another thing is, if he doesn't want to help us, I'm sure I'll find somebody else who's willing to bump him off. And then they will get our appreciation.
He used it to have gratitude, didn't he?
Yes. They will have our gratitude.
Every time gratitude comes up, you just think back to Encounter at Farpoint. What was it? Great joy and gratitude?
Great joy.
Oh, yes. And gratitude. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a way to end a season.
Yeah, I got a feeling that the day that Encounter at Farpoint came out, Marina Sirtis refused to let her family watch that episode. Please don't. Please don't watch this. I do not have great joy and gratitude in it. But that's a different story again.
I'm not entirely sure how the gratitude thing worked, though, because obviously Bajic will know that they've been trying to contact someone in the High Council for ages now, and he's the only one that's answered. So the idea that Picard's going to go to someone else and ask for help seems a little, who else is going to pick up the phone?
No.
I don't think the power's in the right place, though.
Maybe the Duras family. Of course there's going to be people who don't like Gowron. And if they can get the Federation support.
Can you imagine what Picard would have had to have done if he'd called the Duras sisters instead? I need a ship. Oh, what's it worth?
Yeah, they never would have made it. They would have tried to obviously done something.
They would have eaten Picard alive.
Yes, yes. And he would have had fun doing it too. For a while at least.
Well, there's worse ways to go.
Yeah, there are. So the Forge makes some headway with about the Vulcan ship parts. They know where it came from, and they know it will be Will's mission to find out what happened to that ship, where is it supposed to be, and we need to go visit the Zach Dorn to do it. That guy kills me. I mean, just typical
Zach
Dorn.
Oh, he's great.
So anyway... The quartermaster of the supply depot with information you need. That's who he is. And I like that. Yeah, let's get Deanna on this. And the guy sees right through that. He probably thinks somebody pretty like you would get more information out of me, huh? He's probably right. Well, that was.
But I think the guy is right. I think, you know, watching this, and I'm not the, you know, biggest Riker fan, but I think Riker is, you know, he's coming in, he's all self-important. It's like, hey, yes. Dude, we're on a mission. You know, tell me what I need. And he goes, have you made an appointment? I went, no. Well, you know, make an appointment. I think that for anyone that's got a job that's being hassled by someone who thinks that their request is the most important thing that needs to be dealt with now, I think a lot of people can relate to this guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, who the heck is, you know...
Kieran. Tories, yep. Are short. Hung,
yeah,
Parliament.
Looking at that. If you add the numbers together, it all comes to 314. So yeah. It's the others that are going to decide it.
Yeah, that means, I mean, if that's true, and it's it was 10 out last time, but if that's true, we won't have, I mean, regardless if the Conservatives can form a kind of setup that can keep them in power, but May's no longer there. She's gone. Okay, apologies. apologies, Lou, and apologies for anyone else that is out there that has heard that. Oh, and really apologies if this actually turns out not to be true. That would have been a good kick in the teeth.
But the fascinating number for me up there is SNP 34. That would really see them lose 22 MPs.
Although, in fairness, right, what was it? It was up 30 last time?
Something like that, yeah. I wasn't expecting the SNP number to be that low. That's a real kick in the teeth for Nicola Sturgeon, if that's true.
Well, I mean, if. Blimey, I'm not going to bed tonight.
No, I think that's just ruined my bedtime too.
Yeah. Sorry, Lou. Really sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, I'll be going to bed tonight.
You may go to bed before we do. That's right.
All we know is our president has pissed off the mayor of London.
Sorry, with those numbers, Lou, Kieran, there's no way that Labour, Lib Dems, and SNP can easily block anything. They'll put together a coalition, or at least a confidence and supply agreement.
It might come down to the Ulster Unionists. They tend to say the Conservatives.
Sure. I mean the Ulster Unionists. Actually, the UUP.
Oh, sorry, not Ulster Unionists. It's the DUP now, isn't it? They're the biggest party over there.
Yeah, because the UUP don't have anyone anymore. But the DUP certainly will. I mean, that's incredible if that's anywhere near true.
Unless the Lib Dems do it in 2010
coalition. There's no chance. Because that worked out so well last time.
Oh, yeah.
This was supposed to be a 150-seat majority.
Yeah,
that's what they were planning for, and that's what they've lost in the last 6 weeks. Okay, apologies, Lou. Please take that out. Poo poo bum bum wee wee.
Poo poo bum bum wee wee. No, that goes in because you're making predictions, and you weren't supposed to do that until it was over. Remember?
It's over. No, it is over. If the polls are shut. It shuts at 10. Now you can roll out.
Oh, so now you can talk about it.
There you go.
Yep. Because.
That is...
Although people aren't going to hear this for another 4 weeks, so it's okay. And that's assuming I get out one per week. So
people are going to hear about how excited we just got about an exit poll.
Yeah.
That's shocking, right? That's so far away from...
That is...
Anything that was anyone was... not expecting, but that's so far away from consensus... And that's also so far away from where they were trying to land this. This throws everything up in the air. It's not as if we haven't had a lot of turmoil over the last 2 years anyway. But this is just crazy.
Okay,
apologies, Lou. Apologies.
Well, like you said, bum 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 something or doo-doo or...
Poo poo bum bum wee wee.
There we go. That language of yours. Jeez.
Shocking. Clem Dakachin then. Mr. Dakachin.
Dakachin. Clem Dakachin.
Clem Meltychin. That makeup was appalling. Actually, it was almost as appalling as his attitude. Because my impression was he decided to help them purely because he really fancied Deanna Troi. Mm.
Hang on, come on. What's wrong with that? I mean, so Chris, I don't know what you work as, but you know, I've got an office-based job, and you know, without putting too much out there, you know, if someone does pop over to my desk and happens to be nice, they might get work done a bit quicker. Nothing wrong with that.
People approach my desk at work all the time. It doesn't speed things up.
I need to
get my headphones off and stop listening to podcasts.
It might, in fact, slow things down, if appropriate.
Yeah, and I just found out recently I work with a couple Trekkies. Like, ooh. Oh, yeah. check out this.
That's potential listeners.
Yeah, so now I have to stop talking about the job. You know? These people I work with. Gah! Anyway. No, it's not bad. It's not the people I work with. It's the people we take care of while we're working. That's a whole different ballgame. So Klingons don't soften their bodies by putting down pad. What the hell is wrong with these people? I mean, how could they not have daily chiropractic visits if they're sitting, if they're laying on concrete all night long?
They've got proper muscles, right? They've got stuff in the back of their backs that, on the back of their backs, there's a tautology. They've got stuff in their backs, which is, you know, it's not going in, it's not bone onto solid, you know, solid steel, right? It's they've got muscles that are cushiony, I assume.
Yeah, I suppose. All right.
See, I did the whole sleeping on a shelf thing when I was a student. It's right. It was more, well, it wasn't a shelf, it was a floor. Because I didn't stay, I stayed at home when I went to university. So it was about 20 miles or so away from the university. So if I was to go out in town, I had to talk nice to friends who did have a flat, I could sleep on their floor, basically, rather than try to go home because transport sucked. So yeah, on more than one occasion, I slept on a floor or it was a shelf next to a window. So it was effectively a shelf at the Klingon chair. It's not comfortable. I don't know how I managed to sleep. I was probably too drunk. Maybe that's why Klingons drink all the time.
Ah.
They drink, they headbutt each other, they knock themselves out and just fall asleep where they are. There you go.
On the shelf.
Yep.
The T'Pau is missing.
The T'Pau is missing.
I've never lost anything. By the way, never, never.
Yeah. Let me just point out, I also like this guy because there are plenty of people of my plenty of people of my work, some of them might be myself, that are of the opinion of that, oh, James, this spreadsheet you gave me is broken. Nope, it doesn't break. It works. It always works. Well, just have a look at this. The spreadsheet's broken. The spreadsheet's broken.
What did you do to it?
I'm really what's it. I'm in the same kind of character as this guy, and that you have pride in your work, and when you're shown up, it's a
personal story.
It is. And you can see that at that point he goes into, you know, after having been and perhaps slightly flirty with Troy and enjoying in her company, he then goes into full kind of, I'm a database badass. And it's like, I'll find it. It's been cross-referenced in four logs. It must be here.
It must be here. And he never looks down at that console once. He looks straight at the screen as he's hitting buttons.
Absolutely. Wait a minute. I mean, to be honest, that's what I'm like.
Really? And your work is...
You have to think somewhere along the line here a process went wrong.
Yeah.
But there's no way this passes an ISO 9001 audit.
Maybe the reason it's not there is because he accidentally hit the delete button, you know. He lost it.
So who beams stuff to a location without checking the location's actually there? That's
an interesting question,
there's something
too.
There, right? There's obviously something there.
Well, yes, the T'Pau was supposed to
be. Yeah, but they didn't verify what it was.
Okay, it's true that they don't verify what it is. I think that is true. And that's a bit of a... I don't know how transporters would work, right? Because they often mention things like, you want to be beamed into solid rock. And they speak about that enough as if it's a distinct possibility. And it's one of the things that I would not appreciate from my transporter journey.
No.
To be beamed into solid rock.
No, of course not. I think what it is, this T'Pau is what, just a cargo ship that just sits there, and every time they want to put something somewhere, they beam it to one of those ships there. And the T'Pau is obviously missing, so this other warship, whatever this is, takes its place and puts its cargo hold right in those coordinates, and boof, they get the shipment. But I like I don't know about this idea of Riker coming up with this awesome idea of taking a position where, you know, somewhere in this cluster of debris, let's just shut our lights off and let's just hang there as if nobody's going to say, hey, why is a galaxy-class starship in the middle of this? That doesn't look right.
Yeah, it was a bit... It was too shiny to be there, even with all the power off. Although, I say all the power off, why were all the bridge lights still on?
The what?
The bridge lights. They were just on full power. That's, surely somebody would notice that.
Well, there's no window to the outside of the bridge, is there?
Yeah, there is. There's a bubble at the top.
Mm. Oh, well, maybe they shut the shade on the bubble.
I mean, that's a distinct possibility. But also, isn't the view screen actually a window on this ship?
No.
No?
Uh-uh.
I always thought that it was.
Well, no, because when Deanna crashed the ship and everybody lunges forward, they go right through the view screen. And you can see other parts of a ship pass.
Yeah, but then screen. I thought they got like, I thought they went through the view screen and then, you know, then got run over 30 seconds later by the saucer section.
No.
Did they not?
No, because you could see, you know, you see the inside of the bridge. Past the view screen, it's just more ship. If that was a window, they would have been outside the ship. But no, that's just a piece of technology. This, big screen TV that I wouldn't mind getting someday. So, okay, Data. But Data decides to be nice and let Picard take the shelf while he organizes his files. That was just awkward, wasn't it?
No, this is great. This is absolutely fantastic because it's it's Data being Data, and he's clearly not making any noise. Although in my mind's eye, I always imagine that Data has like a low level hum. He's like on a fan or something like that that he can't quite pinpoint. And it's like, what the hell is that noise? And it's like,
yeah. I mean, you should at least hear what it sounds like—a hard drive action moving.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's a solid state drive.
Yeah.
Moving parts,
but that's how I got it. that's always in my mind. I'm thinking that you just have to turn Data off and properly power him down in order to get rid of the full noise. And then the idea that he's sitting there like staring into nothingness, and the way that Data obviously doesn't have anything but this is perfectly legitimate, and why would you be fazed by this this 6 foot guy standing to one side staring at you? You know how it is whenever anyone that's been like camping or anyone that's been trying to get to sleep when you're in a bit of an unusual situation knows that you can't get to sleep when there's someone staring at you. And I really like this scene. It's silly and it's nonsense. It tickles me like a lot of Data things do. Mm.
Okay. Picard is just stuck on a cupboard or something.
Yeah, turn around, Data.
What are you looking at? I'm not looking at anything, sir. I mean, couldn't Data close his eyes or sit down or something?
Face the wall.
Yeah, face the wall.
See, that could have been a funny scene as well if he'd started facing the wall and then Picard just went, no, this is ridiculous as well, and then got up.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, Picard doesn't get to sleep that night. But then again, and then it gets worse because now he's given information that Sarek just died. So now
But we don't know that, right?
Yes, because they actually hand.
Oh no, he mentions it to Data.
Yeah, they hand him information.
They hand him the information, and then he goes. He mentions it to Data, and then we're aware of it. Yeah, no, you're right. I didn't know whether that was here or that was later when he was talking to Spock.
Yeah, no.
So
because then now the toner of this mission has changed, and not only does he have to find out why Spock may have defected, but now he gets the happy news of telling him that his father died.
Yeah, I quite like the way that Picard does this, because earlier on in the episode, Picard makes references to fathers and sons, and Riker just immediately says, yep, no need to go any further than that, I know exactly what you mean, I've had that issue myself. Whereas with Data, he needs to explain it.
Yeah.
So he explains how the whole stubbornness thing we were talking about earlier, and how sometimes the fathers and sons can be too similar and they rub off against each other, and eventually they end up having to go their separate ways because they'll stop them.
So this warship arrives at the junkyard, and it's taken up the position of the Tripoli, right? Is that what it is?
Yes, it is the Tripoli, yeah.
It gets a deuterium storage tanks and then tries to take off, but the Enterprise stops them and destroys them with their 0.75 bursts. Let's just get their attention.
Yeah. By the way, I love the fact that I love the fact that the ship obviously turned up, and it's like, oh, it's just part of our routine smuggling. And you know, sometimes you can find clips on YouTube where people have like baited someone. They've had something stolen from their garden a lot, and then they'll hide and they'll be waiting for them. And it's like this guy comes along going, doom 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 doom, just ready to steal some more stuff. And then the Enterprise lights come on. It's like, holy moly, who put that there? Like, I would have loved them to have had a clip of how the other guys reacted. I know it's not, it's not really possible, or it wouldn't have been ever done. But in my mind's eye, I think about how they would have taken it as the flagship just appeared or just turned itself on from the side.
Some badass galaxy ship.
Yeah, this is done quite well, but I do think this whole plan is a complete mess. They catch them red-handed, yes, but then we start getting, like, they do weird things, like they start powering up their weapons, and then, okay, maybe they're going to shoot us. And then, like, they won't answer communications. It's only then that Riker decides that's a hostile act. So, powering up weapons isn't a hostile act, but not talking to you is.
Yeah.
Seems a bit odd. And then, like, he fires back, but at no point does he consider, they're smugglers. Maybe they've got weapons on board. Or something that might be somewhat explosive. Maybe we should be careful of what we target.
Well, they were just taking out their weapons on the outer side of the ship, but, you know, obviously there was a little power surge on the inside. Somebody's console exploded in their face, which set off another series of explosions, and kaboom, there it goes.
It wasn't Will's finest hour, I think.
So, now, did either of you try to, in your mind's eye, vision a Romulan beauty licking the paint off of Data?
Nope.
Because first you have to find a Romulan beauty.
See, I probably thought about that more in the second half of this when Sela turns up, because, yeah, it's Dash's daughter.
Mm-hmm. She's not ugly. But...
So also Tasha.
Neither one of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the Romulan beauty, on the other hand, I'm sure it's hard to find a Romulan beauty. Okay, so Data and Picard are walking along the Romulan's only Italian restaurant and want to try some soup. And while enjoying their soup, they spot Pardak. Now, what do you think of the Italian, or the Italian, that was being sarcastic there. What do you think of the soup lady? I mean, are they all so paranoid that, what are you, Romulan, are you security? What, are you here to arrest him? Do they all live their lives so paranoid?
Well, I mean, so Romulus is supposed to be a quasi-police state, right? Or are they just a, or is it more kind of, you know, more an open democracy on which kind of dissent and stuff is tolerated? Because if it's the former, then it might not be uncommon for people to come around and to take people off the street, especially if there's been a suggestion that there's been a bit of a kind of, you know, rebel movement or dissident movement in the area.
Yeah, I think you're right with the police state thing. That's why everybody's so scared. Hey, I'm a loyal establishment.
I get the feeling she was one of those conspiracy theory type people. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. But anyway, they try to talk to Pardak, but two Romulan and security guards take him down.
But before that, I do love the idea that when obviously Picard is floundering and he's not able to kind of, like, sell his cover, and then Data comes in and goes, oh, no, we're from such and such a place. And it's like, no, you're not. You don't sound like you are. And in the UK, we have a very big, wide variation of accents. you know, from mine all the way up to Chris's, and beyond. Oh, yeah. And yeah, I like the idea that it will be as if I turned up and I was like, oh no, yeah, I'm just visiting, you know, over from the day from Belfast. I mean, no one would buy it. No one would buy it at all. And in my mind, I just thought, yeah, that's what I had flashbacks to. He said, oh, no, we're down from Newcastle today.
I don't think so. Yeah, that's good.
I didn't think so.
You don't sound like you're from Newcastle. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. And then, of course, Data goes into full Android mode. Well, it's actually, you know... It's a misconception that all Rottecs sound alike. In fact, there are 40...
As it is a misconception that everyone from Newcastle sounds alike.
Yeah, right. Yes.
I met a girl from Newcastle once that didn't sound anything like a Geordie. She was from a more kind of affluent area in Newcastle.
Are you sure this wasn't like Newcastle under Lyme?
New Manchester, you mean? No.
Yeah. Sorry, in joke there. We have more than one Newcastle, or more than one significant Newcastle. But anyway, doesn't matter.
Okay.
there's an Irish one as well, actually.
And there's one in Australia and lots of places.
Well, I still want to know why Scotland Yard is now nowhere in Scotland. Yes.
I used to know this.
Oh, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, you know, what do you have in Scotland? London Yard? Anyway.
We don't really have an equivalent.
Okay, so anyway, yeah, the security guards take them down, and they're led to a cave. Romulans love their caves. Where...
We've missed a bit. The bit where the Romulan proconsul talks to Pardek, and he says... Pardek, what do you know of Picard? He says, nothing.
We did miss that.
But that's got to be a blow to your ego. How can he not know Picard?
Man, why would he know Picard?
Well,
at this point, then they have like a clone of Picard sitting in a mine somewhere. They must know him. doesn't he has to sign off on the checks that keep all of the Riemans in place to keep him in prison.
But see, I would have thought the Romulans might have some understanding of Picard about given their relationship with the Borg, because the whole Borg thing kicks off with the reintroduction of the Romulans in the neutral zone, and it's Picard that suggests sharing information with each other. So I would assume once they get to the events of Q-Who, they share that aspect, and then obviously when we get to Best of Both Worlds, I would imagine anybody that knows about the Borg has heard about Picard and his assimilation. So for Pardek to say, I don't know who he is, that's a massive blow to Jean-Luc's ego.
I mean, there's a huge amount of stuff, secrecy around the Romulan side, which kind of gets to the leads you to under the impression that like the Federation don't know who their leaders are, or their military leaders in particular. But on the Starfleet side, you assume everyone is relatively open, and you'd imagine that anyone in the Senate would know Picard.
He is the captain of the Federation flagship. If any Starfleet captain is going to be known to the other races, it's going to be that one. Mm. So the same way, if you turn around and said, "So, do you know who James T. Kirk is?" Of course, they'd know who James T. Kirk is.
They wouldn't know who he is. Yeah.
Especially the Klingons used to go on about it all the time. Oh, I would love to meet Kirk in battle.
They tried, but they never won. Anyway. Okay, so obviously they were probably led to that cave for an execution, but no, it's actually Pardek trying to get them off the street so they can talk. And who shows up? Indeed, you have found him, Captain Picard. Spock, here comes Spock.
Isn't Nimoy's voice great?
Oh, yeah.
It before you see him, it's fantastic. It carries so well. I don't know if they had to, they've enhanced it for kind of more dramatic effect there. But as he's coming in and he goes, as he's speaking to Picard, it's absolutely wonderful. And I don't think that, you know, we've had this chase for 45 minutes. I don't think the episode suffers from not having Leonard Nimoy in it. He is the main person. He is the main reason why they're doing this. But he's not on screen. And that's perfectly fine. That's legitimate. You don't need the main, the main reason the story is progressing to be on screen. You don't need to have the ring on screen for the entirety of Lord of the Rings. So I enjoy this episode as it progresses. And then when Spock appears at the end, you almost realize, oh, yes, this has all been about Spock, and Spock is here, and isn't this great? And then it goes to be continued, and you go, it's a good thing I'm watching on DVD.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Although.
On Netflix, in my case.
I was going to say, although in 1991, I didn't watch it on DVD. I had to wait until it came out. Damn it.
You know, we didn't get it for another 4 years over here.
I heard that. Yeah.
Nope. No, you're not talking about part two.
Right. No, there's just part one and part two in general. Yeah, sure. I say that. The UK air date was 1995. I am pretty sure I had this on VHS before that. Huh. I don't think I had to wait too long to see this episode. This is one of the few I actually had in VHS. Just because I had Spock in it.
Okay.
It was interesting. I definitely saw this episode before I saw Redemption. So when they were referring back to the fact that they'd helped him in the recent Klingon Civil War, I had absolutely no idea what they were talking about.
Makes sense. Okay. Well, I can't think of anything more. I'm at the end of my rope. And we didn't make it to find out how the election went.
Oh, whatever's away for that yet.
Okay. So I guess it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Chris, what a...
Can I jump in?
Huh?
Oh, I was about to say, can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead.
You were given a bit of airspace there, but I'm happy to let Chris go ahead.
Oh, no, you do it.
Okay, because I see a lot of the thoughts really are very similar to what I just said a little while ago. As you know, this story comes in and it's very Spock centric. You visit so much history that has been built up in TNG so far. So you touch base with the Sarek episodes and Redemption, and you know, to an extent, I think they're nodding forward in terms of Undiscovered Country hasn't been released yet, but you're obviously hearing as well, or maybe it's perhaps true to say that later you nod forward to Undiscovered Country and the role that he played there. I really enjoy this episode a lot. I think that in terms of a build-up for the first part of a two-parter, I think it's pretty much flawless. I'm going to give it kind of a full 5 out of 5. I'm going to be a little bit... It's going to be difficult for me to kind of judge that one in isolation, because I think that part two in isolation probably suffers, but part one and part two, the goodness of part one kind of can bleed over into part two very, very easily. And I do like the way that they set up the story with the junkyard. That subplot has been interesting to me as it's gone through. I like the dynamics with the Klingons. That's great. I like Picard and Data on Romulus. I just feel like this episode is really, really well put together, building on the history that there has been in TNG over the last couple of years, and using an iconic character in a very good way. Obviously, part two becomes more Spock-centric and takes a little bit of a gear shift. But at this stage, I have very little to criticize this about.
Hmm. Okay, Chris, how about you?
I would echo most of that sentiment. There is very little to criticise about this episode. It gets the pacing right. I think it gets the reveal right, as we spoke about earlier with Spock. I think it then gets the actual reveal of Spock right at the end, spot on. The B-plot is probably the weak aspect of the episode, but we'll get payback out of that in the second half of the story. And it's actually not that bad. It's still quite interesting. Our good friend Kalim Dakachin is a bit creepy, but he's the acceptable side of creepy, I think. And ultimately, this is the story that gets us to meet up with Spock and find out what he's up to. We don't actually find out what he's up to until the next episode, actually, which is good. I like that. That's good. It's still that air of what's going on. Because if you think he's defected and you end on that final bit where Picard and Data get captured and Spock's there, then they're in trouble. So I think that's, even that bit is left open well enough that we can come back to that later on in the episode, or the second part, would be a very different episode indeed. But no, I the real strength in this episode, I think, is the stuff with Sarek. It's the callback to the first episode with Sarek and TNG, and how the disease has progressed, Bendai syndrome. And just the fact that he's on the kind of final throes of his life, and how difficult that is for anybody around him, and how difficult Sarek himself is finding it. And it's for anybody that picked up on the whole dementia kind of side of things from the first appearance of Sarek, to then see this one followed up and the way it's done, I think is terrific. And again, full credit to both Mark Leonard and Patrick Stewart for the way it was acted. So yeah, I mean, it's a 5 out of 5 for me, no doubt about it. It's definitely one that you go, okay, I'm just going to watch 2. It might be 2 in the morning, but right, let's go episode 2.
Okay. All right, yeah, I feel the same way as you guys do. This is a really good one. And all this stuff about the Vulcan ship and all these pieces that are laying in their cargo bay floor, what the heck is all this about? You don't get any of that. They keep that closely guarded. I like that. It keeps us guessing as to what this is about, because like LaForge says, every question we answer springs up 2 more. This makes no sense. Why, you know, who wants a Vulcan deflector dish? I mean, what's going on here? And it's not until almost the end of part 2 that we actually figure out how it all fits together. So I like the way they put the story together, and they left us hanging on the edge of the cliff with Spock saying, indeed, here I am. See you next week. So, yeah, I agree with you guys. This is a 5. This is well done. And we'll see if part 2 lives on. As we know, sometimes part 2 doesn't always measure up to part 1. I think they paint themselves in a corner and they have to figure out a way out of it. But in this case, I don't know. I think it might be just as good, because all the writing seems to be wheels within wheels. It all comes together. But yeah, we just don't know how at this point. So, I like it. Okay, so that was Unification Part 1. And for me, this, like I said, this was dedicated to Gene Roddenberry. I want to dedicate this to Pat O'Malley. Okay? This was a man who I grew up with. We were best friends in diapers. And along the way, we had drifted apart into different things in life. And, you know, reunification as we got older, and then he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and 2 years ago tomorrow, as we record this, he finally lost his life from it. So, and this is interesting that this, we're recording this so close to the anniversary of his death, the death of Gene Roddenberry, the death of even Sarek, not a real person, but still, it's in this episode. It's all about what we miss, what we lose. There's a few others that I would like to say I miss you as well. Mostly my parents. And another thing is later this year will be the, I think, 4th anniversary of losing Brian Baker, who was, this, you know, one of my co-hosts on the Lou Trek Show. So, someday Brian Dedamore and I will carry on, but for now, I just don't have it because my Android is gone. My brother from another Android, as I called him. So, but that's who I want to dedicate this show to. And is there anybody you guys want to bring up? You had an hour and 35 minutes to think. If there's anybody you think you like to dedicate it to.
I would echo the episode sentiment, actually. I would dedicate it to Gene Roddenberry. I've always felt like I've got some sort of connection with Gene Roddenberry because I share a birthday with him. But, that's a very small connection. But, I mean, the man is responsible for what is ultimately my favourite TV show of all time. And it's thought-provoking. I spend a lot of time talking about it and writing about it and thinking about it and watching it. And it ranges from television, watching Dentwood, to television that goes on in the background when I'm doing something else. I don't think any TV show has had any impact on me in any shape or form like that, like Star Trek has. And Gene Roddenberry's the man who did that. So, yeah. So thank you.
Yeah. I think I'm going to surprise, I'll probably stun everybody when we get to cost of living. And I got a feeling that, my take on cost of living is another tribute to Gene Roddenberry. I know it sounds weird, but...
The thing is that, I mean, cost of living specifically, right? It is the episode... after, and I think it was filmed shortly after Gene's death, that really was, pretty much the first the first major engagement that Major Barrett had with the outside world, post his death, and it's a very, it's a very, very poignant and powerful performance that she gives in that episode, and I know that. Looking at it in isolation, it's a silly little Laxana episode, but there is a fair amount behind it that you can see.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So it's one of my favorites of this season, and we'll get to that in ten of them, I suppose, 10 or 11. So, all right, James, last chance.
No, I have nothing to add on this. I think that obviously I echo the comments that have been made, and obviously as well, way before I got in touch with you, Lou. I was listening to you and Brian on Lou Trek Show, and it's amazing how fast time seems to go. To be honest.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and it haunts me to this day. He texted me the night, overnight, the day that he blew an aneurysm in his brain. He texted me asking me if I was awake, and I wasn't. It haunts me because I wonder if I could have talked to him that night. And he's got this massive headache. It won't go away. It feels like my brain is going to explode. Would I have thought aneurysm? Probably not. But maybe that's something you need to have looked at. And would it have done any good? I don't know. But I'll always consider that a missed opportunity. So, eh. But that's who this show goes out to. So everyone, Chris, thank you very much for coming on. And we will see you again for part two. Right? That's not just an idle threat.
I'll be back. No, we need to finish your job.
You got to do it right. All right, then.
On the thrilling conclusion to Spock's return.
Logic cannot explain why. I only know that I must pursue this.
Two generations struggle to end centuries of conflict. But secret forces plot to destroy their plans. Now, at the threshold of peace, one man sacrifices his life against a deadly threat.
All of you will die.
Shocking destiny on the next exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Everyone, join us next time as we review episode 8 of season 5, which is Unification 2, the continuation of why Spock is on Romulus. So take care, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
As we mentioned in the show, this episode was dedicated to Gene Roddenberry and his memory, and we also dedicated our part of this episode to the people we've lost in our past, And I would like to close the show out with a very sweet song. This is a metaphor. When you consider that life is a dance, and if you were to know what was to come ahead, you could miss the pain, but you'd have to miss this dance. And so for it's fitting that we end this with Garth Brooks in the dance.
Looking back on the memory of the dance we shared beneath the stars above. For a moment, all the world was right. How could I have known that you'd ever say goodbye? And now I'm glad I didn't know the way it all would end, the way it all would go. Our lives are better left to chance. I could have missed the pain, but I'd have had to miss the dance. Holding you, I held everything for a moment. Wasn't I the king? But if I'd only known how the king would fall, hey, who's to say? You know I might have changed it all. And now I'm glad I didn't know the way it all would end, the way it all would go. Our lives are better left to chance. I could have missed the pain, but I'd have had to miss the dance. It's my life, it's better left to chance. I could have missed the pain, but I'd have had to miss the dance.